since, well, we don't have a quorum yet, so we're not going to move your bill yet, but we will not forget. But we want to use the time we have wisely, and so we'd like to just start right off with House Bill 309, Representative Gault. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you, and committee members. To the bill, state governments across the nation are becoming acutely aware of the increasing cost of medical care for the elderly and the disabled. Many observers see a huge financial crisis looming, and it is so for the state of Minnesota. As our baby boom generation ages and Medicaid costs continue to grow, states like us will be spending more and more of our budgets to cover these costs. Encouraging individuals to purchase long-term care insurance is seen as one important solution to this crisis. Current tax incentives here and across the nation are simply too insignificant to encourage people to buy their own long-term care coverage. House File 309 presents a substantial boost to Minnesota's existing tax credit incentive, a boost that recent research suggests would make long-term care coverage more attractive to baby boomers. We'll talk about that briefly in a moment. My goal is to get done in 5 minutes. Preserving their quality care options, potentially saving Minnesota many times the tax credit in spiraling Medicaid costs. With me today is Todd Pettit. He's an actuary with Allianz, and Bernadette Berger is also here with Allianz to answer your questions. Quickly to the presentation, if you want to look at the overheads, I'll go back. Ecumen commissioned, Ecumen, by the way, is the largest nonprofit senior housing company in the state. They've done the most current survey of this issue. Ecumen commissioned Decision Resources Limited, a Minneapolis-based public opinion research firm, to conduct the largest survey ever of Minnesota baby boomers. The survey was taken late last year and early this year. Some of the findings. The coming cost crunch, the Department of Human Service estimates it could cost Minnesota state government more than $20 billion, that's with a B, billion, by 2050 if we don't change how we pay for senior care. More than half of baby boomers, 56%, say a $500 plus tax credit would be enough of an incentive to help persuade them to buy long-term care insurance. Less than $500 really doesn't offer much of an incentive. 9 out of 10 baby boomers, 85%, would support a proposal that includes increased tax credit for long-term care insurance. The benefits of this bill? Lower Medicaid costs by covering more individuals with private insurance, fewer persons having to reassign their assets through trusts and gifts to get onto MA, and some nursing homes will not accept MA patients. There's only a few, but we also have support from the long-term care industry on this. Madam Chair, I'll let Todd Pettit from Allianz talk a little bit about the cost-benefit here.
Mr. Pettit, welcome to the committee, Mr. Pettit.
Thank you. Madam Chair, representatives, I'm Todd Pettit, an actuary from Allianz. In terms of the cost savings, it's fairly simple, and I was told to keep this short. Basically, there was a study done by two doctors in 2000, independent of the industry, and they concluded that based on the additional policies sold, the incremental policies sold due to a tax credit, you would save $1.06 for every dollar you spend, and that's in taking into account a present value of dollars. So it's actually a much more significant savings in nominal dollars, but in terms of present value, it's $1.06 for every dollar that you spend to save.
Thank you, Mr. Pettit.
Madam Chair, I would add briefly before we go to questions, there have been some questions about whether this amounts to a total $1,000. If you look at the 25% language in the bill, it actually amounts to, I believe, we're somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 or less total benefit. So we're right around that $500 incentive, really, for a total year to a person purchasing this coverage, not the $1,000 that you see. It's the 25% and $1,000 that work together. Questions from committee members?
Members, and Representative Gottwald, did you want Ms. Berger to testify? Nope, you're just here for questions. And Representative Gottwald, I'm looking around the room because I'm looking for Ms. Manzi, who was just here, but I don't know where she is now. And I actually have a question for her, and it relates to your bill, so maybe we can wait on that for a minute. Do other members have questions for the testifiers or Representative Gottwald? Representative Gottwald, I have to look through my cheat sheet now on all the tax credit bills. I guess what I wanted Ms. Manzi to cover, and I guess she's not here, but you are one of the few authors, Representative Gottwald, and maybe Mr. Michael can take a shot at this, was actually trying to do an enhancement to a credit we already have. So what I wanted the tax committee to know is that this is one that we already have and how this bill is different. And if I may, Mr. Michael, if you could take a shot at what we've got in mind. I'm trying to remember if this was Representative Daggett's bill. a few years back that was originally passed, but can we, Representative Sellers has something on this, then we'll go to Mr. Mike. Yeah.
No, I was going to say it was actually my bill up, I think, from, two or three years ago.
Okay, thank you.
In a row.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think, I'm not sure, I think you want to sort of, this bill, under current law, there is a credit that's 25% of the premiums paid to the extent that they're not deducted in computing federal taxable income for long-term care insurance. The maximum on that is $100 and $200, and Representative Gottwald's bill just increases that to $1,000 and $2,000. So it's really just an expansion of the existing credit. And I think what you're referring to with Representative Daggett is she was the author years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, I believe, when this was enacted. I know a number of members, including Representative Zellers, have had similar bills to increase the maximum credit.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. I appreciate that. Are there questions from members? If not, do we have a quorum? We do not have a quorum yet, so we can't move your bill. But we will after when we actually do. And thank you, Representative Gottwald. Thank you for your guests. We appreciate it.
If I may, Madam Chair, real quick. I think the urgency in this is if we can increase the tax credit to the point where it's a true incentive, because that's what the state program is intended to do, time is running out. If we don't start doing things differently here pretty soon, we are going to have a huge price tag to fill, and one that we might not be able to cash the check on.
And Representative Gottwald, we now have a quorum, so I think Representative Zellers would like to move House File 309. And again, thank you, and thank you, our visitors. We appreciate it. We'll lay that over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And so now we're going to go to House File 313, Representative Fritz. Would someone like to move House File 313? Representative Hilstrom moves House File 313. Welcome to the committee, Representative Fritz. I want to tell members that the next bill is House File 338, Representative Seifert. He is in a meeting and will be here when he can. And so we'll get him on as soon as we see him. If not, we're going to go on to Representative Tingelstedt after this one.
No.
Welcome, Representative Fritz.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman and members, for hearing our bill today. I'm Representative Patty Fritz from District 26B. I've been a nurse for many years and the nursing home industry, and I bring you this bill today, which really is coming from my own experience taking care of my mother in my home before she passed, and also watching my neighbor care for her mother in her mother's home. I live in rural Faribault, but the mother lived in downtown Faribault, and the mother was able to live in her home and pass away in her own bed. This bill is a tax credit for those of us who are caring for our loved ones in their homes. We're asking for a tax credit. I believe it's up to $2,400 a year that we're asking for folks who are caring for their loved ones. More and more of us are doing that. If you are able to stay in your home longer, and have someone come in and help you get your meals and your pills and get dressed and meet your daily living skills. It's a big advantage for us all as we age to be able to do that. And I have a testifier. I'm also sending around, I have a number of handouts from AARP and from the Alzheimer's folks as well. There are many folks here in the audience as well. AARP folks are here, elder care rights folks. So a lot of support for this, and there's a lot of need out there. And I'm going to turn it over to my testifier for her presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Otterness. I live in St. Peter, Minnesota. I am a registered nurse. I work in a birth center. I am here today to speak in favor of Representative Fritz's bill. I care for my husband, who has had multiple sclerosis, which was diagnosed in 1969. Within less than a year of his diagnosis, he needed a cane, and by 1977, he qualified for Social Security disability. In 1984, he needed so much help with his activities of daily living that he would have qualified for nursing home care. That was 23 years ago. Today he needs his food pureed, he has a catheter, he needs to be turned in bed, and for decades he has been unable to think clearly enough to handle any of his own financial affairs. We do not have enough time for me to tell you all the things that I do for him at no charge. If David was in the nursing home, the cost would be greater than $200 a day, and that comes to $80,000 a year. There is no way that I could pay $80,000 a year, and he would be on medical assistance. Over the course of time, I have saved medical assistance over $1 million in nursing home expenses for him. I've given up opportunities to earn a PhD. I only work half-time and many other things in order to be a faithful wife. Our tax forms consistently include over $15,000 in non-reimbursed medical expenses. Whenever I talk to other caregivers, a common theme is, do they know how much we are saving the state in medical assistance payments by being faithful and responsible? It is hard work and often thankless. The great anthropologist Margaret Mead was once asked, what is the first sign of civilization that you have found? She answered, a healed femur. And when asked why, she replied, one person cared for another, making it possible for the injured person to survive while unable to hunt or gather. Caring for one another is a primary basis for any civilization. So I am here today to ask you to do the right thing. And it is right for the state to acknowledge the valuable contributions made by family caregivers who make life better for the disabled citizens of our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from members for Representative Fritz or her testifier? Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify either for or against this legislation? Members, if not, we are going to... We have a question from Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fritz, when we were in the previous committee with this bill, we had a discussion about the definition of a service recipient, and that's, I'm looking at line 2.11, page 2, line 11 and 12 and 13 of the bill. And we had a discussion about whether we needed to limit the definition of service recipient to people who have this relationship to the caregiver. And we decided not to remove this provision in, I think it was health policy that we were hearing this in?
Yes.
I think it was. We decided not to remove that definition at that time because we wanted to make sure whether there was anything about the tax code that required the definition to be limited in that way. And so I'd like to ask staff if we were to remove that definition, this under subdivision 3, paren 1, if we took that out, would that cause a problem in terms of the tax provisions?
And Representative Lee Lincoln, does Ms. Manzi and Mr. Michael, could you cite your page and line again here for
us? Yeah, I'm on page
staff.
2.
Yes.
And I'm on line 12 and 13.
And I don't know if you have a comment on that, Representative Fritz, while they're working it out. I think, you know, all the authors of the credits, and for the public who may be following along, we're hearing 52 credit and subtraction bills this week, and they're all good things, and we care about them. We are asking authors to try to help phase the price tags of these bills to some extent, and I think Representative Leland's trying to help here on what we might be able to do by tightening definitions. Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi, did you... Or Representative Fritz, do you have a thought on that?
I'd like to hear what they have to offer.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if I may, with all due respect, I'm actually loosening definitions.
Loosening?
Here.
Oh, she'd like to send more.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that what we discussed in the Health Policy Committee is that when we're talking about caregivers, you know, what we're doing here is limiting it to somebody who's related in a certain way to the recipient. And for example, sometimes you could get care from a very good friend or from a niece or a nephew, and those people would be excluded here from the benefit of the credit. And so that was what we were doing.
Okay, I understand. And we'll get staff's response on that. And thinking about that a little bit, not serving on Health and Human, of course, we're the people who look at the money. I guess the recipient of the care remains the same, so it shouldn't take it shouldn't add or subtract money, because if it's the pool of people receiving care, it's just who's getting recognized for that care. So I think it's probably neutral. But if Ms. Manzi's shaking her head, no, okay. Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think that it is, as Representative Liebling described, just the pool of people receiving the care does not change, that's correct, but the pool of people who are caregivers who are eligible for the credit would change. For example, if I had a neighbor who was a close friend and old enough to qualify and qualified, and I decided to volunteer my services as a caregiver for her, I would not qualify under the bill as introduced for the credit, but I would qualify under the change that Representative Liebling is suggesting. So it would increase the cost somewhat, and we need to ask the Department of Revenue to update the estimate if we were to take out those two lines.
Thank you. Representative Fritz, did you want to comment?
Yes, and I put caregiver in here and talked about husband, wife, sibling, niece, nephew, more or less in a family caregiving role.
Are there others in the audience who want to comment on this piece of the discussion we're having now, thoughts on getting heads shaking? No? Okay. Well, I appreciate Representative Liebling bringing that forward and Representative Fritz, your comments, and I think that's, as the committee looks at all these credits and has to decide what it can pay for, we'll struggle within all those parameters, but I appreciate you bringing that to the committee's attention. Are there other questions? Or other testimony? Representative Liebling.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess that if this bill, I assume, is going to be laid over for possible inclusion, I guess then, Madam Chair, I would make the amendment that I had offered and withdrawn in the previous committee, and I withdrew it. We had discussed it, and I guess I'd like to make sure that Representative Fritz is in agreement. It was simply to delete that subpart one. So I guess I would make that, offer that as an oral amendment, as we discussed doing. I had withdrawn that in the Health Policy Committee just because I didn't want to mess around with the possible tax implications of that change.
Okay, members, Representative Liebling is offering an amendment to House File 313. Would you like Ms. Mandy or Mr. Michael to actually read the amendment? Or direct us again to the line, if you can find your House file, members.
Madam Chair, the amendment would simply read on page 2, delete lines 12 and 13. On page 2, line 14, delete parens 2, close parens 2, and insert parens 1, close parens. Page 2, line 16, delete parens 3, close parens, and insert parens 2, close parens.
The members all have that. Any questions on the amendment? All those in favor? Aye. Aye. Opposed? Boy, everyone's asleep, Representative Fritz. I don't even know how to call that one. I will call that the amendment is adopted. So I think, members, the tentative nature of that vote says we're also thinking about it. As members know, if this is in the omnibus tax bill, we will have amendments in and out for all these kind of provisions. And if there is no more testimony, I'm going to go ahead and lay over House File 313 as amended. Thank you, Representative
Fritz. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Otterness.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I do see that Representative Seifert has made it into the room. So would someone like to move House File 338? Representative Zellers moves House File 338. Representative Seifert, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, this is a real simple bill. House File 338 allows a credit for up to $1,000. For adoption expenses. There is an amendment, I believe, that staff has to make sure that if the adoption expenses were to, right now, the way the bill is worded, if you ride this along with the federal credit, if you had an adoption that cost, say, $8,000, you'd be able to get the Minnesota credit, even though it would end up being less than what the credit would be. So we want to make sure that everything reflects the actual costs up to that amount. We're not giving people bonuses for adopting, and if council could read that or hand it out, that would be appreciated.
Representative Seifert, my understanding is Mr. Michael has left the room to get it.
Oh, okay.
And if I may, Representative Seifert, I think it's appropriate to have Representative Tinglestad join you as well. I think her bill is very similar. I see her in the back of the room. She doesn't hear me. Representative Tinglestad, if you want to join us, you know, we have a full agenda. So we thought if we could hear Representative Seifert and you could just join us at the table, too, we could kind of move these along. And then as soon as Mr. Michael returns, we'll move Representative Seifert's amendment. Sorry to interrupt you, Representative Seifert.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, I think adoption is one of those things that everyone can come to an agreement is a good thing. It's a good thing for our society. It's a good thing for children. And it is something that we want to encourage to the most extent possible, because I think a stable family life for these kids is something that will not only help them, but will help society in general for a lot of different reasons that I don't need to go into detail about what a stable family provides for children. It does get us above and beyond the debate about abortion and those types of things. I think it encourages positive action. This committee obviously has a lot of things to wrestle with, good things, good policies of giving credits for everything under the sun. But this is something I think that a lot of other states allow. I don't have the exact number, but I think it is a good thing with the federal government allowing their credit to have the state of Minnesota step forward and say that we want to be an adoption-friendly state, that we want to encourage children to have a permanent home with families that want them and love them. And I think in reality, the fiscal note on this is affordable in consideration of what this committee has to work with for a fiscal target. I'm not exactly sure what that is yet, but for a $1,000 credit, I think that the numbers are affordable. And if it were something that would blow the budget or whatnot, this is a scalable number, and we could do $500 or we could do $300 or whatever the committee decides. I just think it would send a good message to people. I have had a family contact me. They had lost a child. Had considered adopting, and when looking at the expenses, said it was just a tipping point in their income that they weren't comfortable in doing it. But they are residents of Minnesota, and they said that something like a $1,000 credit would probably tip them to the point of being able to make the plunge and to adopt a child. And while they chose not to testify for personal reasons, I think it's something we have to keep in mind that there are a lot of people that make those value judgments based upon their income or the lack thereof when it comes to an issue like this. So I think it's a loving and caring alternative that can jump over the divide we have on some of the issues relating to things like abortion and bring everybody together, even if it were for a smaller amount of a credit, and certainly whether it's refundable or not or whether it's capped for certain income levels. It's certainly up to the committee to decide this, but this is something I wanted to bring forward for your consideration, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the hearing. I was not given a hearing last year when I introduced the bill, even though I put in three or four requests for one. So I do appreciate the fact that you're giving me a hearing today, and I can turn over to Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Representative Seifert. Representative Rukavina?
I just want Representative Seifert to not feel bad because Representative Finke didn't give anybody a hearing. So. We didn't have a bill, in fact.
Representative Tinglestad, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this bill today, and I don't know how you're going to do this with officially moving.
I think we will have Representative Zellers right now move House File 1341, so we've got that before us, too. We will make copies again on Representative Seifert's amendment and go back to it, and we want to hear both of your testifiers that I see have joined you as well. So thank you, Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and there's a handout coming around, and this is a testimony of Josh Kroll, who I'd like to bring forward. He's really the expert on tax credits related to adoption. He's with the North American Council on Adoptable Children, and actually he's spoken at various conferences, and there is one this weekend as well. So I think that's coming around here. Maybe if he could present at this point, and then I do have an adoptive parent who would like to talk about some of the struggles with the costs involved with adoption and the importance of this income tax credit here in Minnesota for adoption.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Kroll. And I assume you're testifying here. I see on Representative Tinglestad 1341, but I'm assuming you're supportive of Representative Seifert 338 as well. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Josh Kroll, and I work for the North American Council, otherwise known as NACAC, located in St. Paul. One part of my job at NACAC is to answer questions about the federal adoption tax credit from families throughout the country. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 1341. If passed, this law would provide much-needed support for families who adopt children from Minnesota's foster care system and effectively create an incentive for other families to come forward and adopt waiting children in this state. I'd like to give you some background on the history of the federal adoption tax credit that will explain why NACAC thinks House File 1341 is a very good bill. The federal adoption tax credit was passed into law with the Small Business Job Protection Act of 1996 and became effective in tax year 1997. As initially set up, adoptive parents could claim only as much of the credit as they could document they had spent on adoption expenses for the legal process of adoption, a requirement that NACAC and other organizations believed would not help families who adopted children with special needs from foster care. Due to the concerns that NACAC and others expressed, the laws passed included a requirement that the Treasury Department study and report on the effects on adoptions of the tax credit. In its report, issued in October 2000, the Treasury Department made the following observations. Tax benefits were received in 1998 for expenses reported in connection with the adoption of 4,700 children with special needs, or only about 15% of all adoptions of children with special needs. Average adoption expenses were $3,540 per special needs adoption, which is 40% lower than for adoptions overall. The effect of the adoption tax benefits on the number of adoptions of children with special needs is uncertain. The tax provisions lower the cost for adoptions of foreign children by a greater amount than for the adoptions of children with special needs. This decrease in the relative price of adopting foreign children compared to adopting children with special needs decreases the relative incentive to adopt children with special needs. When the federal adoption tax credit for non-special needs adoptions came up for reauthorization in 2001, NACAC used the information from the Treasury report to show that most families who adopted children from foster care were ill-served by a tax credit that was tied to documenting expenses. NACAC then recommended that families who adopt children with special needs be allowed to claim the full tax credit without documenting expenses, language similar to Section 1, Subdivision 1C of House File 1341. Fortunately, another House File 1341 provision is even more beneficial than the federal credit for families who adopt from Minnesota foster care. The proposed Minnesota tax credit is refundable, meaning that parents that claim the full tax credit that can claim the full tax credit, even if it exceeds the tax liability. In my experience from answering hundreds of tax credit questions from all around the U.S., a significant number of families who adopt children from the foster care system cannot use one penny of the federal credit because their income does not generate enough tax liability. As the 2000 Treasury Department report noted, a family without any other dependents would need to have at least $52,400 of income in 2000 to fully utilize a $5,000 adoption tax credit in 1 year. An annual income of $24,650 would be required to use a benefit over a six-year period, although in that situation the tax benefit would not be able to offset adoption expenses as they were paid. Some adoptive families need to recoup their expenses from private or international adoptions. Others who adopt children with special needs from the Minnesota foster care system need support to help their children heal and thrive. For families adopting from foster care, the expenses come not so much during the adoption process, but rather as they raise children who often have serious and expensive special needs. For all types of adoptive families in Minnesota, House File 1341, the refundable state adoption tax credit, is a needed and welcome proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Call. Representative Singlestead, did you want to introduce your other testifier?
Yes.
And members, I hate to do this, but we have lots of bills, so we're trying to move quickly. Representative Singlestead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and we'll be quick. The first half of my bill deals with special needs, and the second half, starting on line 19, the bill deals with adoptions of children that don't have the special needs. So I'd like to introduce Steve Miner, who will talk about quickly his experience with adoption, along with his wife, Chris.
Welcome, Mr. Miner.
Good morning, committee members. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. I wish to thank you for the time you've given me. My wife and I, my wife is a first grade teacher. She could not get off work. I could get off to work today. I'd like to thank my employer, Stillwater Ford, Danny Hecker, for allowing me to come here. He is an advocate, by the way, of adoption, so another method for that. My personal experience and my wife's was it took us about 3 to 4 years going through the process of spending about $20,000 of our after-tax income to adopt a child, which, by the way, he is 4 years old, is a little baby boy, and let me tell you, if there's mud around, he will find the pile, so he is all boy. Our experience went from when we could not conceive on our own. We went through different trials and tribulations, and we could not do that at all. So this bill that I have found out from Kathy Tinglestead and Mr. Seifert is going to help address some of the needs of financial help. Financial help in the form of tax deductions, tax credits can help us to afford this. Now, as you heard, there's probably many people that have heard of adoption. Celebrities have the ability. In fact, there's one in the paper today in the news of being adopted. They have the advantage of extreme wealth to do that. A lot of Americans and a lot of Minnesotans do not have that ability to do that or can't afford it, that would like to adopt a child to help bring in their family. In our own personal situation, we met the birth parents about 2 weeks before they gave or she gave birth, and it was a wonderful experience. It's very tough, though, to meet a birth parent. You are on the spot. You were trying to ask them questions of they should pick you. It's almost like being a candidate, from what people have told me. So I wish to add and help that you can help all of us that are out here in financial burden in dealing with adoption. My personal and my wife's personal expenses have gone upwards of $20,000 and is continuing to this day, as we are in the process of waiting for another adopted child. And it could happen any day, any time. We could get the call at 2 in the morning. We could get the call at 8 in the morning. So I wish to thank all of you. And committee, and thank you. Again, thank you, committee members. And I wish to thank my employer, Danny Hecker, Stillwater Ford, for allowing me to come here during the work day to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Miner. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to testify either for or against these two House files? If not, questions. Representative Solberg?
Just a statement. In 1978, we adopted a child. I think our expenses were about $5,000. There was a priority for my wife and I and our family to have that expenditure as well. We had three natural children, and we thought that our best idea would be to adopt a child. But my question is, and I don't even recall, I think in 1978 it was our expenses period because that was our priority. But I can't remember if there was a federal deduction for that. And is there now a federal and state deduction as opposed to a tax credit?
Mr. Ms. Manzi? Madam Chair, Representative Solberg and members of the committee, there's a federal adoption credit now that's non-refundable that took effect in the late 1990s. The federal government also allows exclusion from taxable income of any adoption assistance benefits that a person's employer may provide. And the exact amount of that doesn't come to mind immediately, but I think it's in the neighborhood of $10,000 also. So, and that's something employers may choose to provide, and then individuals are not required to include that in their taxable income. Then there's an interaction with the credit calculation between actual expenses and how much was received from the employer, and then whatever is left is eligible for the federal adoption credit.
Madam Chair and staff, I don't recall if there ever was a deduction for that. Does anybody remember if, and if there was, would the state have had the same?
Yes, right. If I may, Mr. Kroll.
Madam Chair, Representative. I believe in the 80s, I believe from 1981 through 1986, there was a deduction. But I think it got phased out in the mid-80s.
Well, I'm sure the reason I state that is because I'm sure that it was our expenses period and it was our priority period.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Other questions from members? Other testimony from the public? We're going to go to Representative Seifert's amendment. You should all have it now, members. It's the 80338A1 amendment, and Representative Zellers moves the 80338A1 amendment. Discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. With that, I think we're okay then to just go ahead and lay over House File 338 and thank Representative Seifert
Similarly, we're going to go lay over House Bill 1341 and thank Representative Singleton and thank you testifiers. We appreciate
it. Thank you, members.
Thank you. We are up to Representative Rukavina, House File 1111. And as he's coming up, members, I'm noticing Ms. Carlson Walrath has just told me that we've got Representative Wolschlager's bill on here twice. We're going to move hers down to when we get to all the military items so that we're going to hear that after we've heard the subtractions presentation. I've also received information from Representative Broad that House File 37 is almost the same as House File 551. Representative Broad, did you want to comment? I'm not sure which bill you're saying your bill is the same as. We actually have Representative Broad's bill scheduled tomorrow, but I think she has the same bill, and maybe we want to hear those at the same time, too. So, Representative Broad.
But, Madam Chair, I do believe that they are the same bill. I'm not sure. I think it's 551. I think they're actually word for word. So, you know, whatever you want to do, I also believe that that language is included in the governor's bill and in Representative Hawes' bill. So, you know, whatever the technicality is, I believe the language is well covered.
Okay, I think maybe what we want to do, and this is going to be depending on the time here, is when we get to the military items, we'll start with Hawes, and then maybe we can hear Broad and Wolschlager together then, House File 551 and House File 37. So we're hearing them with the same opportunity for the public to respond. With that, we're going to go to House File 111. Welcome, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1111 for possible inclusion.
Representative Rukavina moves House File 1111 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Tax Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill is here today, and let me just give you a little background. Last year, I think it was last year, the year before last year, I had a bill that was asked of me to be introduced by a neighbor who, when they told their employer that they were joining a volunteer fire department, the employer was ready to fire them. So the bill actually said that, just going by memory, that, you know, employers couldn't penalize their employees. Well, even though Niall's originally from the range, I mean, he's like, his grandparents were from up there, so he's a little more timid than I am. So he kind of morphed it into this study. That what we could do to get more volunteer firefighters and first responders. And so as a result of that study where we went around the state and took testimony, we had a very good meeting up in Mount Iron, Minnesota, I might add. A lot of people there, a lot of volunteer firefighters, first responders. And what came out of it was one of the main ideas was this tax credit. And the idea of giving the employer a credit was thrown out, and the actual volunteer firefighter, volunteer first responder. So this is where this bill came from. But just let me tell you this, because I think, Madam Chair, you'd be interested in knowing, we have a crisis in this whole area. The younger people today are not joining volunteer firefighters like our generation did. Out at Side Lake, I think some of the members out there, their average age is like 52 years old. The other day, from what I understand, there was a fire in Bloomington, and was it in Bloomington?
Eden Prairie.
Two people showed up to fight the fire. So we've got this crisis, and this was a way we thought we might be able to do something about it. I think the revenue estimate is probably pretty accurate. I'm more than willing to cut it down somehow, maybe look at the credit refund, do something like that. But I do think it's an issue that has to be discussed. And whether it's tax credit or something else, we have a crisis looming out there on the horizon as far as being able to have emergency medical attention and firefighters there to respond to crisis, whether it's fires or hazardous spills or whatever. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to these two gentlemen.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. I don't know, Mr. Zickman, did you want to go first?
Madam Chair, Niall Zickman, representing the Minnesota Fire Chiefs and the Minnesota Fire Department Association today, the two in concert represent about 90% of all the volunteers in the state of Minnesota. Just some facts for you. There's an estimated 20,000 firefighters in the state of Minnesota, of which about 17,000 are volunteers. So the vast majority are volunteer. That number has not changed in over 15 years, despite, according to the state demographer, about a 9 or 10% increase in population in the state in the past 10, 12 years in that same time period. So all that's happened is our existing firefighters have aged and turned over, and that's what's leading. And it's a national problem. It's not unique to Minnesota. And national studies and state studies are in concert that the days of getting people to just volunteer with the additional demands with relatively no immediate compensation, I think, are just a sign of the times. And so this, in our mind, is a very cost-efficient approach as compared to going to a career full-time. I don't believe there's a representative in the room here today that doesn't have volunteer firefighters. Even see Representative Earhart, Edina has volunteer firefighters. And I look at around the room, I think every one of you are representing volunteer firefighters. So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Rubina, for carrying this bill and getting the issue out.
Thank you, Mr. Sixman. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members, Buck McKelton, President of the State Ambulance Association. I co-chaired this task force last year with George Espenson, the Eden Prairie Fire Chief, the spinoff of Representative Rukavina's legislation. We had about six outreach meetings throughout the state, and this came up as one of the number one items with volunteers. In the ambulance industry, which we represent, about 5,000 of our people are volunteers. Still close to 70% of all ambulance service have some aspect of on-call or volunteerism that mingles in with them. Recently, a study was done in New York. They have a real comparable model of ours of rural volunteers. And their estimate was $8 billion to move their system to full-time EMS. We're losing about one or two ambulance services a year throughout Minnesota. The Northwest and Southwest, some of the areas, 4,500 to 5,000 square miles are covered now with two ambulance services. Without our first responders and fire services that respond with the ambulances, some folks would have no access to health care at all. And we feel the ambulance, the fire departments, probably the first responders, is the one thing we should try to guarantee people in Minnesota. And we want to look at ways to keep these volunteers engaged. As Chief Zickman alluded to, the aging population of even the EMS providers is shooting right through the roof in rural Minnesota. Our younger people are not getting involved, and we have to figure out how we're going to change that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And we have a question from Representative Zellers. But I would first like to ask, is there anyone from the public who would like to testify before or against House Bill 1111? If not, I will also take just a moment, members, to ask you to join me in welcoming the ninth grade students from the St. Louis Park High School. They're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capitol Historic Site Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government, and they are joining us in the back, and we'd like to welcome you to the committee. Thank you for coming today. We appreciate you being here. Thank you for that. And with that, Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's more of just, I can't believe I'm going to say this, compliment to Representative Rukavina. Hopefully this won't make you take back your authorship, but Representative Pepin saw this is coming up today, and she asked me to thank you, because this isn't just a metro versus rural versus outstate. Our communities out in the northwest suburban area, you know, growing fast, construction constantly. Some of the things we see in volunteer firefighting, it's not just an outstate, it's a real problem for us in the suburbs. So, on behalf of Representative Pepin and I, thank you. You found a bill that crosses party lines and geographic lines. I can't believe it's you.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. We're going to write that compliment down for the record.
You know, I know that your side of the aisle just hates to love me, but you do. So, I was sad for years. But you and I are really close. So.
Is he really... Representative Rukavina, like all the rest of us, is he really from the range, too?
No.
No, he's not? Okay.
North Dakota or somewhere out there. I can, you know, you can take the guy out of the barn, but you can still smell the manure. Yeah. Compliment, by the way.
Other questions, members? Representative Yarrow.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I commend you for doing this, but, and then Representative Rukavina for helping out, but I've often wondered why this is not guaranteed, why this is voluntary. Saving people's lives, whether it's with ambulance, paramedical service, or fire service, couldn't there be a professional firefighter fighting group that, that you could contract with. I know the fire trucks and the ambulances cost a lot of money. Perhaps you could contract with somebody, professional people, so you don't have to depend on charity. I think this is a must, and it shouldn't be a charitable act, even though I commend you for doing that.
Representative Rukavina?
I'm kind of really glad you brought that up, Representative Yottos, because in the past, you know, professional fire departments in places like Virginia, Minnesota, have been criticized by some of my friends, especially on the other side of the aisle, but you do need that professional fire department to respond for the particular reason that we talked about when Buck mentioned me yesterday, that a couple of people only showed up or that were called for the volunteer part. I'm assuming Minneapolis or somebody filled in the gap on that, but I don't know. But you have to have a professional fire department. But you also have this huge rural geographic area. And I don't know the history of volunteer firefighters. I know I belonged to mine when I moved out in the country because it was kind of a camaraderie type thing besides the actual firefighting, but it's you need both, and these people should be compensated, and they do get when they retire some type of stipend depending on which community they live in, you know, a bulk retirement that we try to help them with, so they do get that, but I guess you need both, and there's no way we could afford to have professionals doing it all.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, I think this is a good thing. I like to see what you're trying to do here. Cost is always a factor. I came off of a volunteer fire department. I spent 20 years on the department, and I think the one thing that's changed dramatically, and I think that the public doesn't realize it, is the amount of training and the amount of things that we do today compared to what was done when I started the service 30 years ago. When I first went on the service, it was charge in and try and put out the fire, and maybe you did something, maybe you didn't. But today, with the after effect, basically, of 911 and all the things that have come out of that, you know, it's a completely different fire service today than it was 20, 25 years ago. So I think that's the one thing that people need to be made more aware of, that it's almost a professional volunteer fire department today. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Simpson. Other questions or comments? Representative Zimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, along the lines of what Representative Simpson just said, Representative Rukavina, it's bothered me just a little bit when you talk about professional firefighters versus volunteer firefighters. I believe in my district, I've got volunteer firefighting departments that are excellent. They are very, very professional in what they do. They may be unpaid. They may not be on salary. They may run from their workplace of work to come and fight fires, but there's a tremendous amount of training these fellows put in, and women, I might add. They have tremendously good equipment with modern facilities. They're professional in every sense of the word, and I don't think you probably meant that, but I think when we start saying professional versus volunteer, I think we should be careful about that. We might say professional firefighting people, paid versus unpaid.
Well, thank you, Representative Rukavina.
Sorry for my semantics. I agree 100%, but that's just the terms that are used in the industry.
Thank you. Representative Broad. Representative Broad, did you have a question? No, she'll pass. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just want to also remind you, not only all the things that have been said are accurate, I think the people get hurt, really hurt. In my little community of 261 people, we've got a tremendous ambulance service, and we've got a tremendous fire department that have responded to every kind of imaginable incident, accident, tourist accident, industrial fire, you name it. And we had two, when I was a city administrator, we had two people in our fire department that were highly trained, highly experienced, and they were injured permanently for life and have had very difficult time receiving or having employment. And I know that that happens in other places. I don't know of other places where it's happened to sight. But in our little town, in this little microcosm of a community of 260 people, we got two people in our community that went from a college professor and a plumber to basically disability and whatever, collecting firewood and selling it for $4 a bundle at the IGA. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, and I think it's been alluded to, is the local impact on this bill. I mean, the local impact of the volunteer fire department. One of the major employer in that town is a multifaceted grocery store, bank. And when they have a fire call, when a small town like this, and you're covering that mass, massive geographic area, they nearly have to shut down, the business has to shut down, because so many people work there that are on the volunteer fire department that they can barely keep their business running, but yet that employer still allows the people to go do it. This is a very significant problem, and this is one way that it could possibly be helped. But I really wanted to make a case for the people that actually get injured and their life is altered permanently.
Representative Rickman?
No.
Thank you, members. I'm going to go ahead and then lay over House File 1111. Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony. And Representative Atkins moves House File 1249.
Madam Chair and members, I would also move the A1 amendment to shape it up into the fashion that we'd like to proceed with it.
Representative Atkins moves the H1249A1 amendment to get it in the order he would like. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, I present this on behalf of myself and Representative Zellers and any number of other bipartisan authors of this bill. We've heard an awful lot of tax credit proposals. This one deals with personal health technologies. It allows people to live where they want to live, which, as we know, is in their own homes. It's a voluntary measure, not Big Brother, but it keeps an eye on folks as they live in their homes. I've got Mick Finn here from Ecumen that will walk you through what this technology does. But the main goal here is to let people live where they want to live as long as they possibly can, keep them out of the nursing home or institutional setting, and I might add, I'd like to talk to you after Mr. Finn proceeds about the revenue analysis. I have a great deal of respect for the revenue analysis, but I don't think that they took into account the other side of the ledger, which is the potential cost savings. And I'll talk to you about that after Mr. Finn describes for you what technology we're talking about here.
Mr. Finn, would you like to identify yourself for the committee?
Madam Chair, my name is Mick Finn. I'm the Chief of Operations for Ecumen. We're a nonprofit Minnesota provider of nursing homes and assisted living services for seniors. Madam Chair, members of the committee, appreciate the opportunity given me by Representatives Atkins and Representative Zeller for testifying on this bill. Ecumen is involved, along with many people in the state, in trying to transform the long-term care industry from an institutional base to a base of providing services and products to seniors that allow them to live where they want to live. And you've got a packet that passed out. Ecumen has commissioned a survey, a poll here recently of about 550 people. And one of the questions in there we asked people was how many of them wanted to live in a nursing home, and the answer was 0%. And the margin of error there is about 3%. So there aren't many folks of us out there asking to live in nursing homes. So this bill is, we think, is an important step in getting us to that point where we can follow the, in our case, follow the market to where the market wants to go. Because we think technology is a large, will be a major catalyst in the ability to respond to that demand out there. I'd like to talk very briefly about in summer of 2005, Ecumen piloted with six of our tenants a technology is called Quiet Care, and it's basically a motion detector that we place in apartments. And through that technology, we're able to track what goes on. In our case, we're applying this in the assisted living apartment. And we're able to tailor, dependent on the information that we receive from these sensors, we can tailor our services exactly to meet the needs of the people in that tenant. From minimal, no services at all needed, to very intensive services. During this period, as people change, and typically in our case, people change for the worse. It's a declining situation. Sometimes there's some resistance, some denial of those changes. This sensor allows us to track those changes accurately as it happens, so we're able to apply more effectively the services that we provide. We tested it in six tenants. That was a successful pilot from our perspective. We extended to 30, and we're now currently, we just turned our 600th apartment on using this technology. From a business perspective, it makes sense. but it really responds to the needs of the tenants that we have. They're able to communicate with their family. The family is able to communicate. And what we're saying and what this bill will do is allow this technology that we've basically tested in our institutional setting, and we think it has tremendous application in the private market, the individual family members who are trying to take care of people, to take care of their fathers and mothers, would be able to use this technology and apply the same value to that.
Thank you, Mr. Finn. Representative Zellers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Atkins is going to speak again, and I want to thank him for bringing this bill forward. In your folder, there's a DVD in here. I think it's about 8 or 9 minutes long. I encourage everyone on the committee, please take a little bit of time to watch this, because it is really amazing stuff. It's nowhere near as scary as the Big Brother stuff. And there's an article in here about honor. Representative Atkins and I, one of the residents at one of the assisted living facilities, we went and toured, and honor gave us a tour of a room. And you really don't notice them. They're really not, the little device you see there, we had to actually hunt them out to find where they were in the room. But this is a little bit more detailed version, but please take the time to watch this. This is really an amazing video, and the gentleman in there's got a good sense of humor and a pretty funny guy, too.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify for or against this bill? All right.
The little bit that I'd like to add at the end, you can literally, I can see how my dad's doing or my grandma's doing by going to, it shows up over the internet. They're living on their own, but you can see on the screen how they're doing. You can pull it up on your BlackBerry, on your cell phone, make sure if mom or dad or grandma and grandpa are doing okay. It allows them to stay in their own home as long as possible. What I wanted to comment to you, it's a $500 per person, $1,000 tax credit. We found that was the amount, I might add, from the polling data that would cause people to actually use this technology, buy this technology, and then use it. But the other side of the revenue note that I need to talk with revenue about is that the goal here is obviously to keep folks in their home. If you accomplish that, that means that they're not in an institutional setting. They're not, hopefully not requiring funds from the state, which, five or seven or ten times the cost of remaining in their own home. So I suspect that when we fill out the rest of the analysis, there may well be a cost savings as opposed to an expense. And I think it's a kind of a win-win-win all the way around. The person wins, the family wins, because mom and dad are safe and sound and they're living where they want to live. And finally, it should be a win for the state as well financially when you look at the other side of the ledger and the cost savings. And with that, I appreciate your support and would renew my motion that the bill be laid over for potential inclusion.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll lay House File 1249 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Mr. Finn. All right, Representative Yarles. House File 1312.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members, thank you. Before I want to tell a story, we're talking about nursing homes and so on. My dad was living with our youngest brother, and he said, don't ever let the doctor put me in a nursing home. He broke one of his bones and was in the hospital, and then he had to go to rehab and physical therapy. And I went to visit him and said, how do you like it here? He said, oh, it's great. He says, he thought he was at a wedding reception every day because they wheeled him to the table. He said, you should see the brides and bridesmaids here. He thought that the nurses were so beautiful. It's great here. I said, oh, I'm glad you're happy. Nice not to know where you are sometimes.
Okay.
Well, Madam Chair, Lady, and members, House File, House File 1312 would provide a credit for 50 percent of contribution made by the taxpayer to affordable housing, either through a donation of cash, construction materials, or land. The maximum credit allowed would be $250,000. The bill also contains a capped appropriation left blank for a taxpayer in the state. Before we have the testifiers here, and we'll be short, there's an amendment on for the bill, and I'll just move it on page 1, line 23, strike 1,000 and insert 10,000. This was requested by United Way and other people who were concerned about that amount. It doesn't mean that it's going to be... It doesn't change the bill bottom line, though.
All right. Representative Yarrows, just for the record, could you move your bill and then...
Okay, I move the bill. House File 1213 be included, not possible, I don't want any conditions, be included in the omnibus text. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm uncommitted.
Move the bill, and now would you move your amendment?
Yes, I move that on... page 1, line 23, strike 1,000 and insert 10,000 in lieu.
Okay. Would anyone like to speak to the amendment?
Yes, we have. Oh, okay.
Just, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Amendment passes.
Thank you. We have a couple of good people here. Kim Rose. I know you, but I forgot you. Oh, okay.
Please identify yourself for the record up here.
So. Habitat for Humanity and the Builders Association.
Okay. But please identify yourself for the record.
My name's Chip Halbach. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership, and I am filling in for Sue Haig, who may join us sometime soon. She's the Director of Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. And I'll just speak briefly. Our organization is one that has been in touch with many groups around the state who have an interest in this bill, particularly in light of the rapid increase in the shortfall of affordable housing. That is, we have now some 200 families, 200,000 families across the state paying over half their income for housing. And particularly in northern Minnesota, we have a significant increase in jobs that are being threatened is probably too strong a word, but just in terms of limited because of the limitations to affordable housing. The proposed legislation here follows what has been done in a number of other states, Vermont, Missouri, Oregon, Connecticut, and Florida. But it's most closely related to the bill in law in Illinois. There it's called the Illinois Affordable Housing Tax Credit. And that was first passed in 2001 and is now funded by the state of Illinois at about $14 million per year. And similar to the proposal from Representative Yarrows, that this will has a minimum donation of $10,000 and would allow donors to provide land, materials, building, cash, and marketable securities. Part of the Illinois program is a set aside of that $14 million, $2 million of that set aside for employer-assisted housing. And there in Illinois, over 100 businesses are participating. In a recent report on that program, the governor of Illinois wrote that the Illinois tax credit program has been the driving force behind the very successful employer-assisted housing program developed by the Illinois Development Authority. The program helps our state's businesses become more competitive by reducing turnover, while at the same time it helps moderate income workers become first-time home buyers where they work. That's basically what we're hoping to accomplish in Minnesota. Again, as I mentioned, in speaking with people across the state, in northeastern Minnesota, they have the 1,000-plus jobs related to the expansion of the mining industry going on, planned for there. In the Brainerd Lakes area, there's a rapid increase in housing and land costs displacing low-income families and interest there. With Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, speaking on behalf of Sue Haig, they're hoping to expand the number of habitat homes in suburban communities, but they're very much limited because of the run-up in land costs in those suburban areas. In the east side of St. Paul, the nonprofit developer there is hoping to use this type of program to obtain some foreclosed homes by local banks. And then also, well, then Ken Voss will speak in terms of the western suburbs. But in conclusion, let me just say that this is a donor credit where the donor contributes $2 for every $1 in credit, only used where there is an investment from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And the role of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for these projects is to provide the gap dollars, the last dollars that are needed to make a project work. Therefore, the contribution from donors really offsets and extends what the Minnesota housing can do. I think we all know of the significant problem of housing in the state and the limitations in the financial capacity of Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to do it all. Here we hope to encourage businesses to join in and supplement those dollars from Minnesota housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to identify yourself?
My name is Ken Voss. My name is Kim Voss. I'm the Housing Director at Interfaith Outreach and Community Partners based in Wayzata. I want to build on what Chip is saying, and you know, I hear all the tax credits being heard here today. This does encourage actually $2 to be invested for every dollar of tax credits. I want to talk about our experience in our community about how this can even bring more donations to the affordable housing pool, if you will, and to projects that we're doing in our community. You may know of our organization. If you do, it only serves Wayzata, Plymouth, Orno, Medina, Hamel, Long Lake, those eight communities, Medicine Lake and Minnetonka Beach in western Hennepin County. You may know of us. We sponsor a sleepout every year that gets a lot of publicity. This year raised $1.5 million for affordable housing needs. We use it for a variety of needs, but $375,000 of that went into affordable housing. The people that donate $10,000 or more are people that are known to us. So we can go to those donors and say, with this tax credit now, you're getting a better return on your investment, if you will. Would you be willing to increase your donation? We anticipate that that will happen with each and every one of the 25 donors that we had above $10,000. They're already supporting affordable housing. We also anticipate being able to attract new donors because of the tax credit. I think even adding to the effect that Chip is talking about, where we are supporting projects already funded by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. So I think the spinoff is really more than two for one on the tax credit. It certainly will be in our community. And in the projects that we do, we work with Habitat for Humanity in developing affordable housing. We work with Common Bond Communities, the developer of affordable housing, to develop projects in our community. I think the communities I mentioned may not be the first ones you would think of when we mention affordable housing, but our organization is committed to creating opportunities for low-income families to live in these communities where we have good schools, safe neighborhoods, and where they have a chance to succeed. And our organization helps them do that above and beyond the affordable housing development. So I just want you to think of that as you're considering this legislation. I think it really, the return to the state is significant, certainly for us, and we will be able to develop more affordable housing and have the state's portion of the affordable housing projects we are doing be less than it is now. I know if Susan Haig, the executive director from Habitat for Humanity, were here, she would say the exact same thing. They'd have established donors. Those donors would contribute more given an increased tax benefit. So thank you for hearing us here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Voss. We do have four more bills, and we're adjourning at 11:30. Yeah. But Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify for or against, just briefly?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I want to thank all the authors and co-authors, especially Representative Lanning, who carried this bill last biennium, I believe. Thank you. And there's only one billing association, NISA, from there is here, I understand. Okay.
No. Okay. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Mr. Michael or Ms. Vanzi, are these types of transactions already, is a deduction already available? I would assume that there's that it qualifies as a charitable contribution if the recipient is a nonprofit organization. So we're changing, what Representative Yaros is trying to do here is change the deduction that's currently available to a credit. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, essentially what this does is supplement the tax benefit that's available through the deduction. So, I mean, it's a fairly complicated calculation to figure out sort of what the net tax benefit because most of these institutions, I think largely this is appealing to business entities, but they will get, you know, it becomes complicated because here they're giving inventory and typically, in some cases, or land. But you're correct that they would get a federal tax deduction and a state tax deduction, and then the tax credit will be layered on top of that. And again, as we were talking before, because their state taxes are deductible to these business entities, there's a little bit of an offset because this, in effect, works out to be income to them. The credit works out to be income. And it would not be unusual in some cases for the amount of the contribution that qualifies for the credit for them to get a net tax benefit that may be in the range of 75% to 80% for some of these business entities.
Okay. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Voss, I'm just wondering, I think that there are some very compelling arguments for affordable housing in Minnesota. I think that we have quite a bit to do in that realm. But what I'm wondering about is how much of the affordable housing is rental versus ownership? And then let me ask the second part of my question. What I get concerned about is when we use state funds to put forward affordable housing that is only affordable for one family, and then it turns into market rate housing after that family moves on to something else. And so I'm just wondering, you know, are these lasting affordable housing efforts, or are we doing things in the manner of affordable housing for one but not the next that come after?
I can speak to in our community we're you know, developing mostly rental housing. Many of the, I can speak secondarily about knowledge of affordable ownership programs. You know, Habitat for Humanity now, maybe you can speak to this, about how you, did you hear the question?
Okay.
Excuse me.
You have to identify yourself.
Madam Chair, Representative Sue Haig, I'm the president of Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, and we are producers of affordable home ownership. And those are affordable for the life of the mortgage. We issue 30-year mortgages to the families that buy our Habitat homes, and so they are affordable for long, long periods of time.
The other thing is we create affordable housing through a land trust mechanism, which, you know, keeps the affordability preserved over the long term. And, you know, the rental housing, of course, stays rental housing.
Madam Chair, and I guess thank you, Mr. Voss. That's what I was really trying to get at is, you know, I love what Habitat is doing. In fact, I do appraisals for the purposes of getting people in those homes, and that's my part in terms of the donation. But the land trusts are really something that intrigued me because the equity stays with the property, or a portion of the equity stays with the property, to the equity automatically transferring with the sale, with the person who's selling the property. So I'm very intrigued by the land trust and what they do to further home ownership, but at the same time keep housing affordable for more than one, just one family.
Minister, if I could just respond to Representative Broad. At Habitat for Humanity in the Twin Cities, we do have the first right of refusal on the mortgage to come in and repurchase the home, and that's how we keep it affordable and assure affordability over the long run so that it doesn't get flipped.
I'm sorry, we have three more bills, and so and we also have session at 11:30, so you can imagine we're all getting hyper, at least I am. And that doesn't make, you know, your testimony any less important, but if you can just keep it to a minute.
I'll keep it
to a minute. And identify yourself.
Madam Chair, and committee members, I'm Lisa Furnett with the Builders Association of Minnesota. We are in support of House File 1312. We already have members that donate materials and capital assets for building affordable homes. We think this will continue to incentivize our members. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And Madam Chair, I just wanted to say on behalf of Habitat for Humanity, we also support the work, and we have many donors who we think would increase their level of donation if they had the opportunity for this credit.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to lay this over for a possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Right. Representative Marquardt has graciously allowed us to skip his bill. We're going to move to House File 300 with Representative Hawes. Representative Severson, thank you. Okay. Would someone like to move House File 300 for Representative Hogg and Severson?
So moved.
Representative Severson. We also have amendment. We have H0300A3 amendment.
I move that too.
All right. Representative Simpson moves H0300A3.
Madam Chair and members.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment passes. All right. Representative Hawes, you look poised to speak.
I am.
Please be brief.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions?
No. There you go.
House File 300 is a very significant bill, and there's two sections of it, and that is the tax subtraction for military pension and for military pay. For military pension, it is almost a workforce grant. With the aging of the baby boomers and the need for a very talented workforce, 42 to 44 states have this type of tax relief for their military, retiring military, and especially the states that border ours. So if we want to recruit and move these people back in for their second and third jobs in their retirement, I always vouch that retirement is fun. I've done it a couple times myself. And we want these people back in to Minnesota, and we need them back into Minnesota, and this is one of the factors that they're looking at. The other portion of our bill is for military pay, and we're trying to target the base of this pay, and we need those numbers for filling for our National Guards so that we have numbers in our National Guards and that we have the talent and retention in our National Guard. I'm working in a dyad relationship, a partner relationship with co-author Severson, and he has recruited a few testifiers for us today.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. I'm Paul Adams. I'm Madam Chair of Committee. I'm a retired Colonel, United States Marine Corps, with 27 years active duty service. I'll keep my comments brief. I came to Minnesota from Los Angeles by way of many tours in the Marine Corps. My last three states that I served in, Hawaii, Pennsylvania, and Illinois, all have a military tax credit. I came here to Minnesota due to eHarmony.com, quite honestly. And I've come to enjoy the state extremely well. I'd like to give you three quick reasons why HF 300 should be supported. One, state of Minnesota has already paid for the military training, and so it's now time to bring those tax dollars back to Minnesota in the form of a highly skilled, technically diverse workforce. Number two, Minnesota gains residents who bring proven managerial skills and a high rate of volunteerism. Number three, Minnesota will gain veterans who already have a guaranteed income, thus supporting the tax base through payroll taxes, the purchase of homes, cars, durable goods, and services. In my time here in Minnesota, I've been here less than 3 years. I work in the St. Paul public school system. I volunteer with the Civil Air Patrol here in Minnesota. I have a commercial license to fly aircraft. I am the director of logistics, and I support 28 squadrons throughout the state with logistics support. I also am a standardized patient at the University of Minnesota Medical School, so I'm a patient actor, and I enjoy that greatly. I live in Prescott, Wisconsin, due to the fact that Wisconsin is a very military-friendly state in regard of taxes, but I would love to move to Minnesota since everything I do is within the St. Paul metro area. The state of Kansas right now would like to hire and bring a lot of folks in to their state. Raytheon, Boeing, they have a Hire a Hero program, and I know that that Mr. Wagner here is going to talk about the job implications of bringing veterans back. Appreciate your efforts, ma'am, in supporting this effort in the future, and would highly encourage all of the members of the committee to support HF 300.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Paul Wagner. I'm the civilian side of this equation. I represent Minnesota Wire and Cable, a small business, AUSA, a nonprofit that takes care of those of the deployed, and the Defense Alliance of Minnesota, a consortium of 255 veteran-friendly businesses. I grew up, I'm a St. Paul kid from Creighton High School, and bought mom and dad's business from the, we got some St. Thomas Tommies in the room there. We grew up at the kitchen table, and I was blessed enough to buy the business for 220 employees and $7.2 million in payroll now. We landed our first defense contract, and that opened our eyes with regards to bidding R&D grants and breeding veteran jobs off of the federal government rather than the state. We moved on. I needed design inputs. I started volunteering for the Association of U.S. Army. God bless. It just was felt good to give back after 9/11, but also now been the president for just shy of 3 years. We take care of those of the deployed, the families, you know, edge to edge in the corner of the state. Got just shy of 1,000 members, and these guys overseas from Baghdad, you know, who are dodging mortars, are asking about this bill. It's amazing, you know, what they're thinking about and how they're asking and how engaged they are with the Met these days as to what's going on back here in the state of Minnesota. God bless. A little bit of distraction help goes a long way. The Defense Alliance, finally, is an organization that we started 3 years ago. It's 1,870 members, 255 companies, 125 different organizations. We bring in some of the best individuals in the country from the federal government that have billion-dollar signatures as to where they spend their R&D. We're 47th in the country, 47th state in the country, for raising federal dollars compared to receiving them back. These guys don't understand, because we've got such a strong infrastructure, that why we're not harvesting more of the federal dollars that breed jobs. This bill is all about jobs, jobs, jobs. You know, and the lack of the opportunity of breeding. We've got 3,200 guys returning. We've got another 1,000 that are heading overseas. My members constantly, consistently retire and leave the state. They believe this is a non-friendly veteran state. I'm born and bred here. You know, I love them. I'll die here. You know, but it just offends me that these guys, my members, my good friends, consider this a non-friendly state, and they head out and they head elsewhere. That's my message. Thank you very much for considering.
Thank you, Mr. Wagner. Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify for or against?
Then, Madam Chair, we have Colonel Almas is going to testify to the military portion.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs, and I'll be brief. The bottom line is there's two benefits from the military side. First of all, the recruiting, and the bottom line there is that they see the citizens of Minnesota standing behind them in their decision to serve. And the second benefit is retention. During these times of increased deployment, service members return home to family and friends and employers and are faced with a difficult decision whether they're going to continue their membership with the Guard or Reserve. This new benefit signifies the support of the legislature and the citizens of Minnesota of the importance to remain in active drilling status as a member of the military and sustain the strength of your Guard and U.S. Reserve as we face state and federal mission requirements. And I conducted a survey with deployed soldiers over in Iraq, and this was a near universal and most popular aspect that could be considered by the state legislature in influencing their decision whether they're going to remain a member of the Guard. Thank you.
Thank you, Colonel. Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify for or against? We have two more bills, but they're both mine, and Representative Broad is on one, and I think we're going to have to move those to another day. Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious about the veterans leaving the state here and retiring elsewhere. I see Florida is the leading retiree area for veterans. Do you suppose there's any other reason besides the retirement benefits that have anything to do with this?
Madam Chair, then Representative Earhart, that would be facilities. That's one of the other things that people look at when they are getting ready to retire. What kind of military facilities are there in the area that they can actually take advantage of? And it's another reason that this is a great bill, because we need to market Minnesota. And every time we say to someone who's retiring, yeah, you can come to the state, but we're going to tax your pension like seven other states, 42 of which don't tax their pensions. We're basically making the decision for them. As was testified earlier, there is a tremendous amount of talent that comes with them. 75% of these retirees have a bachelor's degree. 50% have a master's degree. Currently, in the state of Minnesota, we have about 14,000 retirees in this category. We should, according to our population, have 32,000. We bring in $240 million in federal dollars, retired dollars, into this state. We should be bringing in over $500 million. There's a tremendous amount of capital, human capital, that we should be bringing into the state. This is that gray tsunami that's coming down the pike. This is the answer to that. This is probably one of the best bills you could vote on this session, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair and members.
Okay, thank you. I have a note from Chair Lincheski, actually. I need to please invite all of the audience back for the remaining bills tomorrow a.m. at 10 o'clock. But if you cannot, please testify now. So if there is anyone else, this is your chance. All right. With that, I'll lay this House File 300 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and meeting adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, committee members.